is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome my column favorite, Joseph Sternberg, of the Wall Street Journal editorial page. Joe is witty, even when he's talking about potential or actual catastrophes. Right now, New York's opinion is there is a catastrophe named Ramdani. London's opinion is there is a catastrophe named Reeves. Both those names immediately inspire remarks from almost anybody in the room. We're going to concentrate on what comes next. Joe, a very good evening to you. What comes next after Ramdani? You're anticipating that the Republicans are going to celebrate in some fashion. However, you're warning them, don't get ahead of yourselves. Why so, Joe? What do you see coming up in the next political cycle in America? Good evening to you.
Hey, John. Well, I mean, you know, whenever you have a politician like Zoran Mamdani arising in one political party, the instinct in the other party is to celebrate. Because, you know, Republicans are looking at this mayoral race in New York, the election that happened today, and are thinking Mamdani is so far outside of the mainstream that if he is now getting himself elected mayor of New York and is in pole position to become a leading standard bearer for the Democratic Party, because the mayor of New York City is a very high profile job in American politics. He is very adept at social media. There is a lot of enthusiasm for him in liberal circles and some corners of the Democratic Party. And yet his positions are so extreme, and you can make a pretty good guess that any policies he ends up implementing are going to be a disaster. And so Republicans think, the natural temptation is to think, this is great, because, you know, it's the great strategist Napoleon said, wasn't it, never interrupt your enemy while he's making a mistake. And Republicans think that the Democrats and New Yorkers are making a mistake by electing Mamdani. And my caution here is that politics is so unpredictable that it rarely ends up working out like that. And I think that the first clue is that New Yorkers themselves have ample reason to recognize that Mamdani's policies aren't going to work, because New York City has tried so much of this stuff over the years. It's always been a disaster. I mean, even if Mamdani's young voters don't remember David Dinkins or you know, Lindsay before that, they will remember Bill de Blasio, who was mayor only 4 years ago, and the crime and the dysfunction in the schools and the, you know, all of the rest of it. And yet they're voting for Mamdani anyway. And that is a clue that voters are not always receptive to evidence that the platform isn't working on a practical level. And, you know, I think that there are ample examples, including places in Europe, where one party thought that the other party, particularly, you know, a conservative party, thought that the party on the left was making a mistake. And then it turned out not to be so much of a mistake.
You mentioned Jeremy Corbyn for London. I want to go there, but I'm dimly remembering reading a column. Wasn't there a suspicion that Democrats were voting in the primaries in 15 and 16 because they wanted to run against Donald Trump? Do I remember that correctly? Do you remember that accusation?
Well, I think that, you know, there, you often have suggestions that this goes on in American politics. I mean, this is, people never ever learn. And so, I mean, you can point to some examples that are sort of successful. I mean, when I was growing up in Vermont, there was one year where Pat Leahy was running for the Senate, and he had a legitimate Republican contender who had to survive a Republican primary, and then some sort of farmer who was associated with a documentary film production crew ended up doing like a joke campaign, and then enough people crossed over that he became the Republican nominee and promptly endorsed endorsed Pat Leahy. So, I mean, sometimes that strategy works for the party that is trying to engage in the shenanigans. But, you know, just as often, I mean, you point out to the Trump phenomenon. I mean, certainly if Democrats were not voting for Trump in the primaries in early 2016, they were assuming that if he did win the primary, it would be good for them. And we see what a mistake that ended up being in terms of, you know, the fact that he actually won that election in 2016.
And now, so, the London example, the Labour Party went for a fringe candidate named Corbyn. How did that work out?
Well, yeah, I mean, this is the big example that has come to my mind as I've been watching the New York mayoral race play out, because, you know, in 2015, Britain had had a general election. It had gone very poorly for the Labour Party. So they decided that they were going to replace their old leader, a politician named Ed Miliband. And the far left fringe of the party thought that their ship had come in, and they managed to get Jeremy Corbyn over the line. And the Conservative Party at the time was actually kind of enthusiastic about this, although they were reluctant to admit it publicly, because Corbyn was so extreme and a lot of his economic views had been discredited by the 70s, you know, by the experience of the 1970s. He was an unreconstructed socialist. He was infamous for having called Hamas and Hezbollah his friends in an event in the parliament. You know, there were all kinds of anti-Semitism problems that were swirling around him, and the Conservatives assumed that Labour under a politician like this would be completely unelectable. And then accidents happened. The country and the Conservative Party were thrown into disarray by the Brexit referendum in 2016. Theresa May became the Conservative Prime Minister. She had some popularity problems of her own and struggled to explain to voters why they should support her. She called a snap election in 2017 because she knew that they had all of these problems, but she thought that Jeremy Corbyn's own unpopularity would be a bailout for the Tories, that, you know, you could call voters bluff by having this election and they would be forced to come home to the Conservative Party. Didn't work. I mean, if you look at the vote totals in that election, the Conservatives won only 2 percentage points more of the vote than Labour did. So, I mean, it was an accident of the British electoral system that meant that the Conservatives still had a much bigger number of seats in Parliament. But Jeremy Corbyn deprived Theresa May of a majority of seats. So she got stuck then in this weird coalition that, you know, hamstrung the Conservatives for another couple of years until Boris Johnson came along. I mean, the warning from this example is that your opponent's policy problems don't speak for themselves with voters who are frustrated for other reasons, and you can't assume that your political opponent's mistakes are going to help to elect you.
This, in general, describes the populist right of center, very right of center movements in Europe. They go for somebody saying things that are considered taboo or unacceptable or extreme. And that person turns into leading a rupture in the regular voting booth and winning out. Isn't that AFD having allowed people to think that they were both communist and neo-Nazi at the same time?
Yeah, I mean, what we're discovering in Europe, and again, I think this is something that people in the U.S. need to be aware of, if you weren't already, by the success of President Trump in his elections, voters are very frustrated and they are looking for sledgehammers that they can use to break apart the political process. And I think that conservatives can currently fall into the trap of thinking that somehow the political right is in control of that process, even if traditional conservative parties like the Christian Democrats in Germany or the Les Républicains in France or the Old Guard Republican Party in the U.S. are not in control of it. The conservative movement in general is controlled because so many of these insurgent parties are on the right. But that isn't actually true. I mean, you also have surging political movements on the left. I mean, a dude named Jean-Luc Mélenchon, who's the French equivalent of Bernie Sanders, has had a very good run in French politics lately. you know, you had the Corbyn phenomenon in the UK for a few years. You now have Zoran Mamdani and, you know, before him, the Squad, AOC and her friends in Congress in the US. So this is a sign that voters are venting frustration on both sides, and conservatives should not assume that they are always going to be the beneficiaries of that.
It occurs to me, Joe, you're artfully arranging a theater piece that we can't stay out of. It's a role that people take on. It's not the person, it's the role. Of either side, we're attracted to the unacceptable. It's almost as if the audience demands, well, it's not quite bread and circuses, it's bread and outrage, that kind of thing. And the original understanding here is that they're preaching a message that's unacceptable to America, right? But I don't know. Can we prove that socialism is unacceptable to America?
Well, I mean, apparently it's not if one of our largest cities is, electing Zoran Mamdani as its mayor. So, I think that what conservatives always have to remember is that the ideas on the left are not self-refuting. They are very attractive to a lot of voters, particularly young voters who might have less experience with how these experiments have worked out in the past. And I think also, frankly, these days, the poor results of that kind of governance are not self-refuting either. I mean, it is a little startling that New York City is having this conversation again, only 4 years after Bill de Blasio left office, with his unsuccessful mayoralty. I think that this is a sign that, you know, conservatives, and particularly more mainstream conservatives, have to be prepared to actually engage with policy arguments and offer voters something to vote for. Because if your only plan is saying, look at the crazy guy over there on the left, you don't want to elect him, we're discovering that that plan is not necessarily going to work.
We need to rush to London because there's excitement there politically, too. Joseph Sternberg, who's in London for the Wall Street Journal editorial page, he writes political economics. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.